All right, well, hello, everybody.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello, hello. I will, this is John Coleman. I will call the CROG Transportation Committee meeting for Monday, December 14th, 2020 to order. And I would ask Karen to call the roll call, please.
Okay, John, thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. Start with the roll call. Start with the City of Hartford. City of New Britain.
Ralph Trottier here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I heard you. Thank you.
Okay, oh, thank you.
Town of Hanover. Town of Avon. Town of Berlin.
Here.
On a boat, a ton of Bloomfield.
Jonathan. Okay. Jonathan TC is here, also.
Thank you.
Sorry, Jonathan.
That's okay.
On a Bolton.
Patrice Carson is here, and I have no camera today, so you're all in luck.
Ah, shucks.
No, we're not.
On a town of Canton. Columbia. Coventry, East Granby, East Hartford.
Doug Wilson here.
Thank you. Town of East Windsor, Ellington, Town of Enfield.
Donald Nunes here.
Thank you. Town of Farmington.
Russ Arnold's here.
Thank you. Town of Glastonbury. Town of Granby.
Kirk Severance.
Thank you. Town of Hebron.
Kevin Kelly's here.
Thank you. Manchester. Mansfield.
John Carrington here.
Thank you. Marlborough. Newington. Plainville. Rocky Hill. Simsbury.
Tom Roy's here, and
Jeff Shea is here.
Thank you. Town of Summers.
Todd Rowland here.
Thank you. South Windsor.
Jeff Doolittle here.
Thank you. Town of Southington. Town of Stafford.
Devin Copperway here.
Thank you. Suffield, Tolland, Vernon, West Hartford,
Wayne Martin,
Town of Wethersfield,
Eric Greger here.
Thank you. Willington,
Troy Spizzato here.
Windsor. Town of Windsor, Windsor Locks. Is there anyone else from other agency online?
Larry Burrell from the town of Avon.
Thank you.
Got Carlo with Fussin O'Neill.
Grayson Wright from CTDOT.
Good afternoon, Jennifer Carrier, Federal Highway Administration.
Thank you. I'm sorry, who was the person from Fussin O'Neill?
Chuck Harlow.
Eric Anderson from the town of Andover.
Thank you. Is there anybody?
Good afternoon.
Ed Personowski from CT Rides.
Kalisha Jones from CT Rods.
LaShonda Drake from Greater Hartford Transit District.
Adam Kessler from Town of Windsor.
Thank you. Is Is there anyone else? Okay, John, thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Item number two is the public forum. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to address the committee? Hearing none, seeing none, we'll move on to item three, which is adoption of the minutes of our meeting held on November 16th. And I would entertain a motion to so do.
So move, Chris Edge.
Is there a second?
Second, Patrice Carson.
Thank you, thank you. Any additions, corrections, deletions? Hearing none, all in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? It's unanimous, Karen. Move on to item number four, staff reports. Bob, you have the first two, the mobility study and the lots of finance. Hello, hello.
Rob, you're on mute.
Sorry about that. Thank you. I got halfway through. Jeez. Okay, starting over. Greater Hartford Mobility Study. This is an effort that DOT has recently begun, and it all stemmed from their efforts to what grew out of the viaduct study for the I-84 viaduct in Hartford, which had a number of structurally deficient structures on I-84 through the viaduct area around the Aetna corporate headquarters there. As that study progressed, it got more and more involved, and the scope of that seemed to really expand to take care of bigger needs, including even the I-84 91 interchange area. They were looking at capacity issues there, and it really started to, it was a NEPA document, it was an EIS, so it was a formal federal process, which is a big lift, and the scope started to really get a bit out of control. In the meantime, DOT had repaired a number of the bridges, and they thought that the repairs they did turned out exceptionally well, and the safety of the viaduct was no longer a concern for at least 20 years or so. So they decided to step back from the formal EIS process they were undergoing and modify what they were looking at to look at it in a more holistic approach for the whole Hartford region. So what they stopped the EIS process for the viaduct in particular, and now are undergoing this planning and environmental linkage, which is called a PEL, or planning environmental linkage, for a bigger area with bigger goals. And the core study area, as you can see on the screen, is Hartford and East Hartford. And they're not only looking at highways now, they're looking at all multi-modes of transportation through that area with those two cities, towns as the focus. As you can see in the graphic map there, they're also looking at how that affects six corridors radiating out from the Hartford area is also going to be included in the PEL. This is going to be a three-year process. It's more high level and less detailed than an EIS, but it's an official federal document that in the end will have a report and is designed to feed straight into the federal EIS process. So there are in the handout, if you actually went to the PDF on the second page, there's information on how to get involved, the study website, there's also a mailing list you can sign up for, and as part of the PEL, they need to come up with a public involvement plan, which I'm not sure if they've come up with yet or not. It's still early in the process. They're looking at existing conditions now, but I would expect they'd roll out their public involvement process very soon. I've reached out to the study team, and they are on board with giving us a presentation at hopefully the January meeting. So there'll be opportunities to ask more questions directly of the team at that point. And that's just a bit of an overview of what's going on. There's going to be all kinds of looks at potentially even highway reconfiguration. You know, I know, you know, you've probably all seen that Larson has been involved with some fairly aggressive planning also, ideas. Everything will be on the table. And that is the Greater Hartford Mobility Study, PEL. So if anybody has any questions.
Any questions from anybody? All right, we'll keep an eye on it. So, lots of funding cumulative.
Yes, this is just shows a, the graphic here shows statewide how LOTSIP has been performing financially, how much has been expended really, and how much is in the pipeline. So the step-like line, blue line, you can see the authorizations given each year statewide to the program, which do match the STP urban amount. I didn't realize it. I thought STP urban had outpaced us, but because in those first, in the second or the third and fourth year, you can see it jumped from 45 million to 74 million. That was actually a Molloy effort to even surpass STP urban funding. So in aggregate, we've received actually more than STP urban, and we are back at STP urban levels with the latest authorization of 67 million in the past year. Now I want to explain the red and green lines. These are based on actual expenditures, and which is the red line. So it's not quite what authorization is, because every time you have authorization, you know, more commitment of funds are issued, and there's a lag between that and the actual expenditures, but you see how it follows the staircase up. Then the green line is cumulative LOTSIP funds awarded. These are backwards. It looks like the green line should be the committed funds, and the red line. Oh, no. That's right. Okay. So the red line is the funds committed. So these are commitment to fund letters, and the green line lags it because that's when they are actually awarded in construction. And one concern of the department now that we're heading into a budget year and a budget cycle is getting this green line up. As you could tell, the green line recently has kind of flattened a bit, but going into the future, you can see a steep increase. And that future is based on our and all the MPO's quarterly reports. So a lot is expected to come very soon and be awarded very soon with projects hitting the finish line. The thought is we should all be pretty diligent in trying to keep that line steepness, so we get a lot of funds expended in the next few months, so that when it comes time to budget the next 2 years worth, we can show a lot of, you know, we can show we're really expending the funds at the rate they're being authorized. So that's the statewide view of funds committed and expended. I don't know if anybody has any questions on that.
Just a comment, with all due respect and appreciation, I don't think it's us that's slowing up that green line.
Couldn't agree with you more. One thing, Rob, is could they add finished projects?
Finished as in totally completed out of construction?
Yeah.
Probably. I'll bring that up with them.
Just so that you'd have start, commitment, start, end.
Yep.
That way you really can see the timelines.
Yeah, this is their chart because it has all the MPOs in it.
Yeah, I'm saying it'd be a statewide look.
We can see if we can add that.
Any other questions or comments? All right, Karen Promoid, Condot Solicitations Update.
So this is just a quick update. We heard from DOT that they are expecting in 2021 to be doing a quarter study solicitation. We don't yet know at what point in the year that's going to fall, but we did want to give everyone a heads up on that. And then we were also intending to just give a heads up on CMAQ, but then since the mailing, we actually got that full solicitation, which was released end last week. So I'm going to turn it over to Promode to speak a little bit more about the CMAQ side of the solicitations.
Thank you, Kara. My apologies, my camera is acting up a little bit, so I'm blanked, so, but I'm still here. Good afternoon. On December 4th, we received CMAQ solicitation guidance from CONDOT. This asked for proposals from towns via MPO or rural COGS for CMAQ program this cycle. As you know, the CMAQ program is a federal program that funds transportation projects and programs that contribute to attainment or maintenance of national ambient air quality standards in non-attainment area or marginally attainment area. For this solicitation, which typically covers 2 years, CONDOT has earmarked $12 million each year in CMAQ funds. Prior to matching requirements to fund CMAQ projects, proposal from our MPOs as well as other rural COGS and MPOs. As per CONDOT's guidance, CROG will be able to submit five projects for consideration, and towns can submit projects ranging from $200,000 to $4 million each. Proposals related to CMAQ projects are due by April 7th to CONDOT and must be submitted via by MPOs and cannot directly be submitted by towns. You can find the list of general project types on the memo we sent you on Friday. So last Friday, we communicated with you via one email that went to chief administration officials, but we CC'd to Transportation Committee, town engineers, town planners, and public directors of public works. All the required and reference materials are posted on our website, and the link is on that memo. Please take some time to review the memo that we sent to you. And we are requesting that you submit a notice of intent to apply form to us by January 8th of next year, 2021, so that we know what type and how many applications are coming so that we can review them in a timely manner. The completed CMAQ application are due to CROG by February 19th. We will review and rank the applications and present it to March Transportation Committee meeting and Policy Board meeting for endorsement before submitting to CONDOT. And we'll probably be submit, you know, at least five projects because that's how many we're allowed. So we look forward to getting your notice to intend to apply form soon. And then if you have any questions, you can either call me or email me to answer any of your questions. At this time, if you have any question, thank you.
Thank you, Promoid. Any questions? All right. If you didn't get it directly to your, check with your CEO. Roger, rumble strips.
Yes, centerline rumble strips. So we attached on our website, we have this letter that you're seeing on the screen now, November 10th, that went to the chief elected officials. This is a program that DOT has to install centerline rumble strips on town-owned roads. And the goal is to help reduce, it's a proven countermeasure to reduce head-on and sideswipe crashes. So there have been a lot of crashes, 27 fatalities, over 2,000 injuries from those type of crashes on non-interstate roadways. So the DOT has this program, and the criteria for the roadways is that it the traffic volume needs to exceed 2,000 vehicles per day. The speed limit needs to be 35 miles an hour or higher. The minimum lane width needs to be 14 feet. Pavement needs to be in good condition and a low residential density. So this program is intended for a year 2022 construction season, and there will be no cost to the local municipalities. So the DOT put this letter out to the chief elected officials on November 10th. We heard just, I had heard along with a few others just late last week that only 25% or 25 of the 169 towns had responded to DOT by the deadline was December 9th. However, there had been some reaching out to Joe Ouellette, who's running the program, and he has extended that to December 31st. And this letter went out also, hopefully, to all the public works officials on Donna Shea's UConn T2 Center's public works listserv. So we just wanted to bring this to your attention in case our committee members hadn't heard about it yet. It seems like a good program and want to make it fully aware of it so you can make use of it should you choose.
Thank you, Roger. Any questions?
Chris Edge, I'm wondering, is it possible just to send that back out? Because it sounds like some of us may have just missed it.
Sure. So it is on our, if you look on our meeting documents on our, on the CROG website where all the other meeting documents are, this letter is right in there. Otherwise I'll send it a copy to you, Chris, directly.
That'd be great. Thank you. Appreciate that.
This is John Carrington from town of Mansfield. Do you need a negative response? Because we don't meet the criteria. We have no road with a speed limit of 35 miles per hour.
Okay. Yeah, you don't really need a negative response. They were just looking for responses from those that wanted to participate.
Why you only heard from 25 out of 169, because I think that applies to many towns.
Okay. All right.
Roger, Chris Edge, I found that. I'm all set. You don't need to send it. Thank you.
Okay. Very good.
Any other questions? Still no TIP amendments. That's a good thing. All right, item number six is the LATSIP funding request on the multi-use trail, Simsbury and Bloomfield, Satoria.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. So a memo was included in your packet, and it was a request for a funding increase for Route 189 corridor multi-use trail. And this is a project that is in Bloomfield and Simsbury. So Conduct District and Traffic Unit reviewed the project and had additional requirements. And as a result, there was an estimated construction cost had increased from 7 to a little over $2 million, which was a 31.7% increase. The towns of both Bloomfield and Simsbury have agreed to a town share, to split a town share of $550,000, and this will supplement the approved LATSIP funds. So as a result, they're requesting the approval of an increase of $497,400 from $1.02 million to $1.5174 million, which is a 48.7% increase. The project was originally approved under the 2015 LATSIP solicitation, and it was approved by the Transportation Committee as a multi-use trail project, and it was for $700,000. There was a subsequent funding increase of $320,000 for rock excavation and guide rail in September of 2017. The project is currently advancing to the final design. So based on the reviews from the district and the traffic unit reviews, the additional requirements included, they were related to roadway improvements at the state routes 315 and 189 intersection. Specifically, there were geometric improvements, widening the intersection, adding a bypass lane, and this provided better traffic flow for the crossing of the proposed trail at the intersection. It was actually $40,000, and this is a problematic intersection, relatively minimal amount that provides an increased benefit to the level of service and an overall positive intersection improvement, as well as a crossing for the trail. Additionally, there were traffic signal modifications and a replacement of existing storm drain drainage facilities, this which would limit the gutter flow spread. And this was also at an additional cost of $185,000. There was rock slope scaling and rockfall barrier that were requested to protect the trail. And this, and also a landscaping in lieu of a barrier separating the existing roadway from the multi-use path were included at a cost of $110,000. Additional incidentals, contingencies, as well as police protection also amounted to $162,400. So the trail, as you know, is alongside State Route 189. It's part of the East Coast Greenway route, which is prioritized and also a regional priority. And with both towns contributing significantly, this conduct and incorporating conduct requirements for this multi-use trail, the staff recommends the approval of the additional $497,400 of LOTSIP funding for the project, increasing its LOTSIP cost share from 1.02 million to 1.1574.
Thank you, Satoria.
You're welcome.
Does Simsbury and Bloomfield want to make any additional comments?
John, Jeff Shea, I just want to say that, you know, it's been a long road. The design process has been a long one. CONDOT has really been wonderful in working with us, trying to get this to work. The big issue on some of these costs was a separation between the existing road and the proposed trail and how that got treated. And I think we came to a fairly good compromise with some give and take, and that had some impacts on cost, unfortunately.
Thank you. Jonathan, do you want to say anything?
No, I think it's been summarized pretty well. Again, I think, you know, it's an important project, and as Jeff said, the DOT certainly worked with us and you know made some concessions with respect to narrowing down the roadway, but as Jeff said, that increased some costs with drainage and police coverage and stuff like that, which is why we're in for the increase here.
Move approval.
Any questions from anybody? I therefore entertain a motion to approve.
Move approval.
Thank you, Peter. Is there a second?
Second, Russ Arnold.
Thank you, Russ. Any further discussion? All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? Karen, it's unanimous. Thank you all.
Thank you, John.
Item 7, performance measures on the safety targets. Roger?
Yes, so we have this is a follow-up to last month's discussion on our 5 safety targets that DOT has set for calendar year 2021. As we've done in the past, these have been reviewed and endorsed by CROG. This year, they are a little more aggressive than the method used in the past. That in the past, they just used the 5-year moving average, which is a recommendation from Federal Highway, kind of a process in general. Not that they're required to do it that way, but they looked at other kind of measures as well, as we discussed last month. So at this time, the staff is recommending that the Transportation Committee endorse the 5 CONDOT safety targets and recommends that the attached resolution be given to the policy board for approval at their meeting this coming Wednesday.
Any questions? I'd entertain a motion to endorse the staff recommendation.
So moved, Tom Roy.
Thank you, Tom.
Chris Ed, second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? It's unanimous. Item number 8 is approval of the Regional Transportation Safety Plan.
So our Regional Transportation Safety Plan, we have the document that was posted on the website, was what we received from VN Engineers, who are the consultants for the state that had been preparing the plan. This is the plan that we had, that was distributed to the Transportation Committee members back in May for review and comment. Since then, the consultant and the state team has incorporated comments. The staff at CROG has seen several iterations addressing additional comments that we've had made by the staff. So now we are basically ready to approve this report. It is a 5-year plan. The intent of this is that it's a new process that the state is undertaking, where each COG, they're developing a regional transportation safety plan for each council of government. It's intended to be updated every 5 years. The data in the plan that was used in this plan is from 2015, 16, and 17, 3 years of data, and then proposed countermeasures for the high crash intersections and high crash corridors are included in the study. And so we are recommending that the Transportation Committee approve this and forward the attached resolution to the policy board again for approval, being that the report was prepared using that 3 years of crash data and with identifying top crash locations and countermeasures that are reasonable. And then our implementation plan going forward is that we'd be reviewing this with our transportation committee on an annual basis and look, review how we're doing and how to improve, reducing fatalities and serious crashes in our region.
Thank you, Roger. Any questions? If not, I would entertain a motion to endorse the staff's recommendation and so recommend to the policy board.
So moved, Britton.
Thank you, Rob. Is there a second?
Nice roundabout, by the way.
Patrice Carson will second it.
Thank you, Patrice. Any further discussion? All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? It's also unanimous. Thank you all. Item number 9 is a presentation on the CT Rides overview and COVID-19 return to work survey results. Ed Perzanowski, are you on?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, floor is yours, sir.
All right, thank you, John. So for those members who may be new, or just as a refresher for everybody, you know, CT Rides is, you know, basically what we are is we're a transportation demand management for the Connecticut DOT. And really what we do is we go out to organizations and we set up commuter assistance programs. We do that for a couple of reasons that we'll get into, but basically we receive money from CMAQ, and you know, our goal is to take cars off the road or to reduce the amount of single occupancy vehicles and to encourage different ride sharing modes such as transit and carpooling, things like that. So we'll talk a little bit about CT Rides today. We'll talk about a return to work survey that was issued earlier this summer. And we'll talk about some of the services that we've been doing over the past few months, because really our sort of whole way of doing things has been turned upside down because of the COVID-19. So we'll get into all of that. Next slide. So again, CT Rides, we're a program of the Connecticut DOT. Our goal is to reduce single occupancy vehicles, primarily from driving to work, to reduce congestion, to lower greenhouse gas emissions. And how we do that is we set up programs at different organizations. When I say that, it's primarily worksite, but we also do work with, colleges, universities, different nonprofits, wherever there is sort of a destination for people to get to. And how we do that typically has been marketing, do on-site events and education and giveaways and things like that. So that sort of has had to take a back seat to some of the new safety measures that are in place that we'll talk about. But primarily that's what we would do is educate commuters on their choices. What are your options to get to work? So no matter where you are in the service area, there are options. It might not be an express bus, it might be a local bus, or you might have the carpool option, but basically our goal is to find a solution for every commuter. Next slide. So some of our programming for employers, every employer that we work with, we call a transportation leader. They have a dedicated account manager. And by working with us and by acknowledging that, they'll have a point person, that they'll work to implement some amount of programming, we'll recognize them as a transportation leader. This is a new program, and it's really a way to showcase all the companies and organizations that are working with us. We are kicking off this endeavor early next year. We're going to have a virtual event where we're going to invite all of our transportation leader members, and we're going to have a virtual event in February. We do custom worksite assessment, data analysis. So we'll work with the company, find out where their employees are coming from, what modes are available to them. Equated to what we were calling a try it day, where we would find employees that lived in a certain corridor, had a certain start time, and we would get them to take an express bus or the train or some other, shared use mode where, people would arrive to work at the same time. So, we would build ridership like that. We also do some data analysis, find out, what are the issues that are of particular interest to the employer, whether it's, parking, whether it's getting employees to work, what are the specifics for that company? Where's the workplace population coming from? What are the start, work, and end times? Does transit work? Does carpooling work better? So we'll get into that sort of analysis for the employer. Worksite enhancements, what are some of the things that the employer could be doing to sort of make commuting more accessible and more available for their workforce. Events and engagement, again, in pre-COVID, we would have on-site events and, people coming up to the table. So now that's had to stop. So, how do we manage that? Where we have a virtual room now where, people can get in virtually, they can go on as long as they have internet accessibility, whether it's on their phone or their laptop or their PC, we can have the same level of service and offer people the same information that we would on site. Then specialized consulting on telework, which is, obviously been a big push over the past, 6-9 months. We really look at a company's situation, what are your needs? Do you have an existing telework program? If so, how can we better support that? What are the next steps for teleworking? How is your management team working with the teleworking? How do we measure the work throughput? So there's all these different ways in which we can measure your telework program. And, if you have some questions, we can help you work through that. Flex work schedules now are a big thing, where, we're going to have when we get into the return to work survey, we're going to see some of the outcomes where people are going to be doing a hybrid, not full-time telework, but not full-time in the office either. So how does a flexible schedule work? Especially when, with being capacity issues in the office as they are, where we're only having, 25 or 30% of people in the office, how does a flex work schedule work? So we provide assistance on that as well. All right, next slide. And then from the end user perspective, we have custom commute plans where we will, you know, basically say, hey, I'm coming from Enfield. I work in Hartford. What are my options, right? So we can explain, you know, hey, you have an express bus. This is the time it leaves. This is the time it gets downtown. We'll give them basically step-by-step instructions on how to do it. We have our interactive ride matching and trip planning tool. So that's available online. That's also available in either of the app stores, whether it's iOS or Android. You can download the CT Rides app and you could become a member there for free. We do your impact metrics from trip logging. So if you're carpooling twice a week, or if you take the express bus once a week, or if you take a train, you know, what is your impact based on your typical, you know, what is the impact of your shared ride versus your single occupancy trip? And then a new thing that we have, we've always had points for trips. One new thing that we're implementing is trips for anybody now. So even if somebody is in a single occupancy car, making a single occupancy trip, they can get points for that now. Although it's much lower than you would get from a shared ride, obviously. So this is something that we're experimenting with. It's goes back to behavior economics, where you know, we're giving people an incentive to try a new mode. So if anybody is interested in that, you know, we could talk a little bit more about behavior economics and how we've been sort of incorporating that into our program of late as well. We have the emergency ride home program, where people, if they carpool or if they're in a van pool, they get, you know, there's an emergency at home, or if their driver leaves or for whatever reason, we'll reimburse them for the cost of the commute home. Trial pass program, if they want to take an express bus or a local bus and they've been driving previously and they want to try a new mode, we can get them the pass to try that new mode. And then we have our live customer support team, which we have you know, we do the customer support for the CT Rail Hartford line, the CT Rail Shoreline East, as well as regular commuter questions. So we have that. We're going to be expanding our customer service hours beginning in the new year from going from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. So, you know, just to better be able to answer questions that people may have if they're, you know, standing on the platform, or if they have an issue with the TVM, or, you know, hey, the ticket vending machine took my money. How do I get a refund? Things like that. So we'll be able to better walk them through that. Okay, our statewide return to work survey. If you can go to the next slide, we can get into the particulars on that. So what we were looking to do is to understand the impact of COVID-19 and you know, how that impacted people's commuting habits, how they got to work and how they got around. And you know, some of the details on the survey, we looked at residents who commuted to their workplace before COVID-19. You could see the survey, you know, where the survey was out to. We had our email list, social media, our CT Rides members, our transportation leaders, our employer partners. We also had the transit operators help promote this. We had over 4,100 responses, and I just want to say that we did have about 200 people who indicated they were either furloughed or laid off. That we excluded from the final survey. And we had 430 people who worked out of state but lived in Connecticut. Primarily that took were Metro North riders. And then we had 350 people who indicated they worked from home full time. So we excluded them from some of the questions, although we will show you the one question where we did include them, just to give you a little bit of an idea of that. And just to give you an idea too of the demographics, Hartford County was the, we had the most responses out of Hartford County. We had over 2,300 responses. So almost 57% of the responses came from Hartford. The second place was New Haven County, followed by Fairfield. So it goes in line with, you know, where the job densities are and sort of where our sort of employer partners are. But Hartford County led the way with, you know, for workplace participation on that. So just thought that was an interesting note. And then as we get into some of the numbers, you know, financial and insurance was very well represented as well. So we can go to the next slide. And so what we'll look at is employee work locations. And you know, to just basically, this is, you know, did you work from home? Did you work to the office? Did you do some sort of hybrid? And what we see in the beginning in July before COVID was that almost 80% of people said that they were at the workplace full time. So this is going back, you know, before COVID. We didn't put a time on that. So that could be January, February, you know, whatever time before the first sort of stay-at-home order went into effect, you know, how people, where people were working, right? And then, so that's almost 80% of respondents said that they were in the workplace full-time, and then a much lower percentage were a mix of workplace and home, that was at 15%, and then, you know, 8% said they were working from home full-time. And then as you get into July, by the time the survey was issued, that sort of inverted, right? So you see now we're at 28% of people working at the workplace full time. That leads us to say that, you know, perhaps that was retail or essential services or, you know, so, sort of, you know, grocery stores and hospitals and healthcare settings. So, you know, things that can't be done remotely. So you have to go into the workplace. And then that number that was at home full time, that went from 8% to 55%. So there was a big sort of inversion there of, you know, workplace where people were telling us where they worked. And what we're going to see at the end of this is that after COVID is that just about a quarter of respondents want to work full time at their work site. We see what we see is that either people want to continue teleworking or continue teleworking in some fashion, whether that's you know, primarily some hybrid plan where, you know, you may be in the office once or twice a week or a couple times a month and you're working from home the rest of the time. So, you know, that's how does that impact people's commuting habits? So that's really what we're looking at here. Okay, next slide. And this is just a slide to look at the primary commuting modes. You know, the personal vehicle was over 60% by far and away the preferred mode to get to work. We see 24% of people that took the bus, and then a much lower percentage that both took the commuter rail and also carpooled and vanpooled. But what we see as we get into July is that people that are returning to the office, that they have left those either the bus or the shared rides they were taking, and people that had the option of moving to a personal vehicle did that. So by July, we were looking at over 75% of people were in a personal vehicle. And then that sort of dies down a little bit, or that goes down to 69%. But and then you notice something interesting here is that the commuter rail, you know, is pretty flat, but the bus does rebound a little bit. So that goes down from a low of 13% in July, goes back up to 18%. So we can get into some of the reasons for that, but you know, I think that speaks to the essential nature of the bus system, who rides the bus system, and where the bus system services. You know, again, the essential workplaces, people that have to get to work, also some of the demographics there, where, you know, people may not have the option to get into another situation, or may not have access to a car readily, as some of the either people who are carpooling or people that are on the commuter rail. Next slide. And these are some of the concerns that people have told us they need to see before returning to the transit system. And now, if you look at, there's a difference, a little bit of a difference between the commuter rail system, the CT rail system, and the bus system. The number one concern for rail passengers, they told us, was a reduced transit schedule. I think both CT Rail Hartford Line and Metro North significantly scaled back operations because of the pandemic and because of the decreased numbers of travelers. So that really impacted a lot of people that were taking the train or that would have used the train. So that was the number one concern that they had. And then the number two concern was sharing space with others and the concern about the ability to clean and sanitize on a regular basis. Now, when you go over to the bus side, the concern about sharing spaces and the ability to social distance while on the transit vehicle, that was the top concern. And then number two behind that was the ability to clean and sanitize on a regular basis. And then number three was the concern that others will not wear masks. Now, this is obviously before the governor's order, I guess, well, that was in August when the executive order was that you needed to wear masks on a public transit vehicle. So, you know, that's, it's sort of addressed, but, you know, being able to social distance and being able to be safe while riding transit has been a sort of a common theme here. And just one note too, I just want to look at this. So one thing that we'll look at is the, let me just call up my numbers here really quick. So transit riders in July, we did see commuter rail. 14% of respondents told us they were still using the transit service, but almost 29% able shift to a personal vehicle. Whereas bus riders, you know, we had a shift to a personal vehicle of just 6%. So again, there's that sort of difference between the commuter rail and the bus system. Okay, next slide. Essential workers, this was just a question about, you know, did you have to go to your physical workplace? And you can see this breaks down along age and income levels. So again, this goes back to sort of what's the population of people that are being told to go into work. So essential companies, logistics companies, you know, delivery drivers, things like that. So next slide. And this is the industries with highest telecommuters. Again, insurance, IT, education, places that have portable tasks, people that were maybe had some form of teleworking before, or companies that had either maybe an informal program before. So those were able to continue to teleworking, and now they've been able to ratchet that up pretty quickly. And then companies that were essential and people were going into work, you can see the breakdown there, healthcare, manufacturing, engineering, and in what modes they're using to get to work, a private vehicle, pretty overwhelming again. Next slide. Now, what this is telling us are future plans for transit use. So, you know, once they go back to their workplace, you know, do you plan on continuing to use that system? So, you know, you can see the commuter rail, we're looking at 64% on average of people staying with their prior commute mode. So we see the bus obviously has the highest amount of people that would continue using it. And again, I think that goes back to our previous point of, you know, the essential workplaces that the bus served and sort of the population and makeup of bus riders. If you look at the van pool number there, you know, people have told us that there are concerns about being able to socially distance themselves and, you know, being able to be safe while using a van pool vehicle. You know, it's so that's been an ongoing, that's a concern for people that are in a van pool. And you could see that, you know, a significant number there plan on shifting to a personal vehicle, you know, that were previously in a van pool. Next slide, please. Now, conditions to returning to public transit, pretty far and above, wearing masks are required. That's been essential for both transit riders, for rail transit and for bus transit. And then social distancing and increased frequency. Again, we talked about previously the decrease in schedules for the transit, for the rail riders, the decrease in services. Whereas, you know, we didn't see that concern among bus riders because the local bus system was, you know, there was no local service really cut. So that had sort of stayed intact. So cutting the frequency of bus service wasn't really an issue for the bus riders. Although bus riders did say that they were concerned about, you know, the increased cleaning of facilities and vehicles. You know, one thing I would just like to point out is that, you know, at least any of the research that we've seen or we've come across is that there's been really little to no transmission of the virus on transit vehicles, no matter if you're looking at research from any of the big cities, you know, New York, Washington, Boston, or if you're seeing things from overseas, whether it's from Europe or Asia, you know, we haven't really seen that transmission on transit vehicles. So that's a positive. Okay, next slide. And again, this is another slide with, you know, how people would like to continue to commute, whether it in using teleworking or you know, going back to the workplace, and sort of the different makeup of the different industries that are falls under those categories. So you can see the industries again: insurance, IT, finance have a higher capacity to telework, and those employees would like to continue doing. Next slide. So just to sum it up, we're going to see a major shift to some form of teleworking, you know, likely to occur post COVID-19. People that are going to the workplace, at least initially, will be using a personal vehicle. There's a lot of concerns about using shared rides and sharing a space with other people. So people that do have an option will be shifting their modes. And transit ridership is going to suffer for a time until customers are convinced that it's safe to return. That's not to say those changes are going to be permanent, but it's something that we're going to have to address if transit riders are going to return. And then one of the other things that we saw was traffic patterns are likely to change. We saw some streetlight data analysis from earlier this year, and you know what we saw was extended morning peak with lower traffic volumes, a slower afternoon rush with an earlier afternoon peak that is extended, overall higher VMTs, but it's going to be distributed a little bit differently than COVID than pre-COVID-19. That may be because of flex work arrangements or people that are teleworking, taking discretionary trips during the day. So there may be a couple of reasons for that. You know, we didn't really get into that. But, one final thing just to sort of wrap up this section is that, riders told us, or the commuters, this is what their intentions were. So this is not obviously, we didn't survey the businesses themselves. So this is at least what the commuters are telling us. Okay, next slide. And then, so COVID-19 and how do we respond to everything? So if we can, we can just go to the next slide and I'll wrap up here. So it's already 1 o'clock. One thing that I mentioned before is that, we typically would go on site and we'd meet people and we'd interact with people and now we can't really do that. So how do we do that? We have virtual activities. We have a new virtual room where you walk into a room and it's like you'd see tables and brochures and flyers and everything else. It's just that instead of having us being on site, it's all virtual now. So you have the same high level of engagement with somebody. You can chat, we have the live chat feature. So our commuter program manager will be there with you. We've increased our telework support. So we did a series of teleworking webinars earlier this year. We also have support for employees as well. So people who are new to teleworking and may have to work through some kinks, especially now with kids are home or if you're in a hybrid learning at school. So how do we work through that? We're reviewing the travel guidelines with the DOT and the state officials. That's actually right up on our new website. That's another new thing that we have is our CT Rides website has been rebranded and totally redone. It's more interactive now. In our return to work collection and data analysis. So that's sort of to wrap it up. If anybody has any questions, I think you can reach out to Kara and she can reach out to me and we'll get you an answer.
Thank you, Ed. A couple of things. One, can you share these slides with the members of the committee?
Sure. Yep.
If either you or Kara could get those distributed.
Sure thing. Yep.
What was your sample size?
We had about 4,300 respondents that we used.
Oh, super. And are you considering all going back out, to see what the impact of the availability of a vaccine would have on some of the responses?
So our word from DOT is that they would like to do another survey, a commuter survey next year. So if that, includes, the vaccine question, I'm not sure. We haven't crossed that bridge yet, but we're definitely going out. Well, we've been told that we're going to go out again next year to issue a similar commuter survey.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks.
And John, just a note, we will after this get the presentation posted up on the meeting page on the website, so everyone will be able to find it after this.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Ed. Any other business to come before the committee? Hearing none.
I'll move to wish everybody a happy holidays and close our meeting.
I second that. Chris Edge.
I'll second that.
Thank you for that. And from the chair also, I hope you all have a safe and healthy and joyous holiday season. And that we look forward to gathering again in January.
Thanks, John.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Be well, be safe, everybody.
Motion. Thank you.
Happy holidays, everyone.
Thank you, Karen.
Take care.
You're welcome, John.